Welcome to Weekly with WIC, episode number one. This week, we're going to explore what's behind the numbers, specifically about how the data is reported, what our local county is looking at versus what the governor is monitoring for his watch list. Love Local is a weekly podcast produced by Kate & Company and in partnership with Expect More Tehama. Our priority is community engagement, trusting that an engaged community is a vibrant community. In this season, Love Local aims to answer the big question: what will parents, community members, and students need to make the mental shift in order to operate in a consistent and safe manner during this pandemic that will allow our kids to return to school, reduce the COVID-19 positivity rate, and keep businesses and schools open and people safely working?
Hello, my name is Lindsay Miller-Byrne, and I'm a PA here in Tehama County, and I have had the honor and privilege of knowing and working with Dr. Wickenheiser for the last decade and a half. He's not only our public health officer here in Tehama County, but he is an internal medicine physician and retired from over 30 years as a physician at Lassen Medical Group. So we're just really excited to be able to tap into his knowledge and also help our community with some better understanding. I can honestly say that he is a very, very caring, deeply caring person. He's reasonable, he's rational, extremely intelligent, and he is really committed to keeping our county open and operating during this pandemic. So he's also going to help us sort of make the mental shift of how we can keep those safety parameters in place so that we can keep and operating in a really safe and healthy manner. People that know him and his patients used to call him Dr. Wick. So that's why we're calling this series Weekly with Wick. And today we're going to just really unpack a little bit of the data, talk about the testing and positivity rates, and just really have a great conversation. So with that, welcome, Dr. Wick.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you for being here. So really, we're just going to sort of get into it, if you will. And I know that there are so many numbers floating around on the internet. If you go to three different sites, you're going to get three different sets of numbers. So help our community understand how the data is collected, how it's reported, and specifically, what are you looking for to keep us off of the governor's watch list?
That's a very difficult question to answer in many ways, but let me just tell you about how we're doing it in Tehama County, because I think that's very important. First of all, our data comes directly from a number of sources. We have a community testing site here at the community center. It's called LHI or OptumServe. We handle up to 132 or more tests per day from that site. We also have a contract with UCSF, and UCSF at no cost through the Chan Zuckerberg Institute does testing for us. We simply have to get the materials down to San Francisco to be tested. In addition, we have access to the public health lab in Shasta County. And lastly, we have access to, for instance, the hospital if we need something very quickly. In all those instances, those results are recorded back into something called CalReady. CalReady is a software product that the state of California has, and that software product collates all the data. The biggest problem that's being seen in California right now, and it was announced by the governor and the state just the other day, is that the data that the state's been putting out for the past week or more has been inaccurate, and that data has totally undercounted the number of cases. Now, I can tell you that our data that we show on the Tehama County Health Services Agency website is up to date and accurate, because if we find that individuals have tests, we have a list of all the tests that are being done. If those results do not show up in CalReady, we actually go back and validate that. In other words, we have manual methods of checking that. So often we have the information 2-3 days before CalReady gets it in, if the CalReady software is working. So that's where our numbers come from. And if a person looks at the numbers at the Tehama County Health Services Agency website, the public health portion and you compare it with the state, you will see the numbers are way different. Mm-hmm. But I have to tell you, our numbers are accurate. Now, when we look at those numbers, what we're looking at the case rate per 100,000, and the state, as a trigger to go on the watch list, basically says if your case rate is greater than 100 cases per 100,000, that's a potential trigger to go on the watch list. We look at the case positivity rate. So that's the number of cases that are positive over the total number of cases that are done. And so that percentage is then calculated. And the state looks at it with a 7 or 14 day lag. And then on one of their websites, they add another 3 day lag. Mm-hmm. So that's why when you go to the websites from the state, you will find they do not match up. Now, the state has a website called the County Data Monitoring website. And that website applies the rules for when a county is going to be on the watch list. Even though our numbers in Tehama County currently exceed the threshold to be on the watch list, we have not met the state threshold because they're using different data interpreted differently. We still feel that it's safe in our community based on these numbers because what we're seeing is most of these numbers are associated with social gatherings. We've seen some associated with, say, a multi-day rosary after a person had died. We're seeing various situations like that. Many of those occurred earlier in the month. We have reached a peak, and we now see that our numbers are dropping off. Mm-hmm. So it all looks very favorable. Now, that's not to say that we can't have a big outbreak that happens in our county and suddenly our numbers change. Because for us, if we get 20 or 30 cases in a day based on the population of our county, that's a lot of cases. And so any outbreak, any cluster that we have can certainly do that. Most of the clusters that we've seen have been associated with family groups, a lot of them associated with the Hispanic community because often the families are living closer together. There's more people in a household. We may find out when we do contact tracing that instead of five people living in the household in one family, there are two families and there are 14 people in the household. Mm-hmm. So we've been reaching out to the community, specifically to those types of situations, to help people change their behavior and be aware of what's going on.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
You're listening to Love Local, a podcast series dedicated to fostering community engagement. During this season, we're focusing on COVID-19 and more specifically, information that will allow our kids to stay in school, reduce the positivity rate, keep our businesses open, and people working safely. This podcast is produced by Kate & Company in partnership with Expect More Tehama. To gain other valuable resources, visit expectmoretehama.com or follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Love Local.
You can imagine it's complex and really multifactorial, a lot of criteria that's involved with not only the data collection, but the reporting, so you can understand how confusing it is. And I appreciate you just shedding some light on that for us. So it sounds like as of right now, we are trending in a good spot. We're safely off of the governor's watch list as of yet. So I think the million-dollar question is, you know, could you give us maybe three things that we could do collectively as a community to support that negative trend so that we continue to stay far off of the watch list?
That's actually a fairly easy question to answer. And the reason being is that if we look at the basic tenets in terms of how we can treat this, prevent this from spreading, we know that the number one is distance. So that's why we say 6 feet. Hence, Lindsay and I are trying to maintain this spatial relationship. Mm-hmm. So 6 feet of distance. The second thing is masking. Masking adds another layer of protection. We know that when people speak, some people speak and a lot comes out of their mouth besides words. And as a result of that, we know that people just sitting and having normal conversation, 6 feet is adequate. If a person is exercising, what comes out of their mouth may go 12, 15 feet. We know that singing can cause material to come out of the mouth 35 feet or more. And the same goes with wind instruments, if people are playing wind instruments. So if we say space, we say masking. And the other thing is to avoid social gatherings. If you're in a family group, cohorting together, meaning you've spent your time together, you're not going out exposing yourself to other individuals, and you keep the number small in the family, that is the safest. The large outbreaks that we're seeing everywhere all have to do with get-togethers just like that. There was a recent case in Shasta County. Family had a birthday. 4 people ended up positive as of the birthday. Then some of those family members went to a graduation. Another 6 people then became positive. Then some of those individuals went to another event. So by the time that you're done, you have 20 people. And of those 20 people, if you're symptomatic, that's one thing. You recognize it. You may do something about it. But if you're not symptomatic, you're thinking you're well, you go out, you're visiting, you're getting close to people because you say, you know what? This is an old family friend. I can go over to their house and have dinner. We can sit down and maybe have a cocktail or so and chat. And next thing you know, you've spent a couple hours with that individual. A couple days later, that person becomes sick. You find out that they have COVID-19, and now you've been exposed. So space, masking, and gatherings, those are the 3 things that we as a community can do to prevent us from being on the watch list. And in terms of masking, it's important for people to realize that masking should occur anytime you're out of your home. Driving your car, you don't have to mask, but as soon as you go into the store or heading towards the store, you should put your mask on. A lot of people think that it's not necessary to put their mask on as long as somebody is not physically right there. But we do know that if people, for instance, are working in public areas and they're not masking, certainly there's droplets that are going about in the air, and that if somebody happens to walk into that milieu, they are going to get exposed to those droplets. And remember, getting COVID-19 is dependent on how many of the droplets that you inhale. And it doesn't have to be at one time, but it's cumulative. So for instance, if you have an hour of exposure to somebody who has COVID-19 one day, a half hour the next day to somebody else, what's going to happen is once you reach that magic threshold and enough of those viral particles are growing, then you're going to get sick.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, thank you for that. Those are great 3 things that we can remember. So social distancing, masking, and avoid social gatherings. Would you put a number on that, or you just say large gatherings over 10? Are you in a community? Just to help clarify some of that.
The rule that we're using now, as people ask about gatherings, we know that as long as we keep the numbers 10 or less, mm-hmm. and if people maintain social distancing, the risk of getting COVID-19 is very low. Is it 0? No, but right. It's low. And we don't want to take away people's ability to meet with other people. We're social beings,
right.
But we need to look at what the risk is.
Right. Makes sense. So we know that testing is important, and it's a significant part of how we stay off the list and basically keeping our community open and thriving and operating. So what does the community need to know about testing specifically? The types that we offer in our community, the sites, and kind of give us some information about testing in general.
As I already had mentioned, we use Optum or LHI, and they're based at the community center. We know that we have that as a free source of testing through the end of August. Now, when I say free, it means there's no out-of-pocket cost to the individual that goes there. If you have insurance, they take your insurance information, and they will bill your insurance. If your insurance does not pay, you do not pay. So there's no out-of-pocket cost for that. Previously, through LHI, we did only the nasal pharyngeal swabs. And that's when you take a swab and you push it all the way back up in the nose till it reaches the nasal pharynx. And if we do it correctly, people usually get a tear in their eye when that's done. As of a week ago, we started using nasal swabs only. So what happens in that situation, the middle portion of the nose is swabbed. Both sides of the nose are swabbed to make sure we get adequate viral material. Mm-hmm. So that is much less intrusive. It's much more easily tolerated by the patient. Yes. And most people would be willing to go back and have a repeat test if they need. The testing that we do through UCSF, that's nasal pharyngeal swab. We being the health department, are the ones that do that. So for instance, today I have some of my staff going out to contacts of individuals that have been positive, and we're testing people in the home. We've done the same thing in the jail setting, juvenile hall setting. We've done the same thing with the homeless individuals. We've tested, for instance, the police department, all the city employees for the city of Corning. We go out and do those things. When we send the information off to UCSF, if we get the specimens down there, we usually get the results back in 48 hours. The specimens that go to LHI or Optum, they all go to Quest Laboratories. And Quest Laboratories has been overwhelmed. So the last statistic I saw last week on our testing, 176 hours before tests may come back. Now, that's not very helpful for us, because if we need to do contact tracing, we need to identify very quickly which individuals are positive so we can contact them, we can find out who their contacts are, and we can effectively isolate or quarantine the appropriate individuals. So in that situation, we're usually using either UCSF to test, or we send specimens to Shasta County Public Health Lab. Those we get back within 24 hours. And then we also have access to the hospital lab. The hospital lab, unfortunately, is limited by the number of cartridges that they have available for their machine. And so those are primarily used for people who have to be admitted to the hospital. And for those who having a quick test result makes a difference in their therapy.
Right. That's great. So I would say, from your perspective, what is sort of the direct ask, if you will, of our community in terms of getting tested?
When we first started testing, we, of course, had very little COVID-19 in the community. So our goal then was to test to find the prevalence of COVID-19 in the community. Right now, what the state looks at is, are we doing a correct number of tests? We should be doing somewhere around 130 tests a day to meet the criteria. Now, the state doesn't hold us to that. It just says we have to be able to do that. But one of the criteria for being on the monitoring list is the case rate positivity. And if the only people that we test are symptomatic, we can end up with 100% positivity. So it's really important that we have community tests, continue to test in a surveillance fashion. So the question is how often should you test? And we have certain criteria for healthcare workers and people who work in skilled nursing facilities. But for the general public, What I would say is it would be nice if everybody got tested at least once. Also, if you've been in a situation where you think you may have been exposed or you've had bad behavior, in other words, you haven't socially distanced, you didn't wear your mask, and now you think you maybe have allergies, it might be worthwhile to go get tested.
Right. That's great. I appreciate that. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Wick, for your time today. I know that you provided a lot of information for us, and hopefully it helps the community sort of unpack not only the data, it demystifies a lot of sort of rumors that we have going around our community, and just overall mitigating fear. And I'm excited to have more conversations so that we can arm our community with knowledge and hopefully empower some positive behavioral change.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Love Local, believing that an engaged community is a vibrant community. This episode was brought to you in part by Expect More Tehama and our friends at the Shasta Regional Community Foundation. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and visit our website at expectmoretehama.com. Do you have a specific question? Send an email to kate@expectmoretehama.com.